Hey guys, did you know that you can subscribe to the Investor Coaching Show podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts? When you subscribe, you get notifications with new episodes so you never have to go looking for an episode or worry about what you've missed. So if you're on your phone or computer, go ahead and pause the episode real quick and become a subscriber. If you're not sure how to subscribe, go to paulwinkler.com/how-to-subscribe, all one word, how to subscribe, for instructions, or click the link in the show note. Now let's get started.
Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And a welcome to the Investor Coaching Show. I am Paul Winkler, talking about the world of money and investing, financial planning topics, and those types of things. So, you know, one of the big things that people try to do on a pretty regular basis is, where are markets going? What's going to be happening in the future? Is the market, you know, super high? Is it overpriced? Is it overvalued? You'd hear that kind of stuff going on from time to time. And especially, it's a fever pitch right now because you get a lot of people that are just nervous. They get nervous because, you know, it's been a bull market that's run for so many years. I mean, 2009, and it hasn't seemed to stop for, you know, the S&P 500 anyway. Most other areas of the market, no, that's not true. If you look at other asset classes, they've had plenty of down years. In the past 10, 12 years, there have been plenty of negatives. You know, so the reality of it is, you know, when I say the market, I'm sounding like the rest of the world. And I hate to sound like the rest of the world when the reality is there's so many different markets out there that, you know, investing wise. But that being said, I will actually bring up a couple things that I thought was, well, they were kind of interesting. One of them was an article in MarketWatch. And, you know, I like this stuff. Just kind of make a counterpoint, because you hear so much negative all the time. You know, and, you know, you may have heard me say before that there are sections of the market, like international companies and small companies and value companies, whose prices are very, very low compared to book value, not underpriced, properly priced. When you look at company prices versus their assets, the price of their assets, or the value of their assets, it's a lot of areas of the market are just low, and they are for lots of good reasons. Matter of fact, one of them, of course, is going to be supply chain issues, and, you know, things that you've been hearing about that. Matter of fact, there was an interesting article about supply chain. One of the solutions to the supply chain issues was rail. They were talking about the possibility that that might be the future out there as far as getting goods to market, you know, because, you know, we have issues right now with all kinds of infrastructure issues. And I know, you know, I have people that I know that are in trucking, and they've talked about some of the issues there and some of the maybe that there are not enough drivers and you know, it's just some of the issues. But one of the things that I saw was this article. It was how to move more goods through America's clogged infrastructure. And it was robot trains. And they were just saying, hey, look, you know, if you're looking at a way to try to get things out there and you don't have enough people to drive vehicles. And this surprised me about this. I didn't realize that trains accounted for a third of the ton miles, which is, that's a ton of weight carried per mile that freight travels in the U.S. every year. A third of it. I had no idea. You know, you see trucks all over the place. You think that's primarily the way things get there. But, you know, there is, it's almost as much as carried by trucks, they said, which was very, very surprising. They said trains might seem like a mature technology. Can you remember that? It was kind of like, you know, trucking was going to do away with all trains, and we weren't going to have that anymore. And no, it's actually quite a thriving industry still. And they said that, you know, might seem like a mature technology, you know, not a lot of room for improvement or expansion, but not necessarily the case. And that they're saying in here that there was truck driver shortages, companies scratching their heads over how to meet their goals for slashing carbon emissions, because this is something that ebbs and flows, and you go back and forth through history. And I remember back in the 1980s, we were hearing a lot of this same stuff. You know, we were talking about people are very, very environmentally conscious. Then they're not. Then they are. Then they're not. And I kind of stay out of that kind of stuff, because it's because it can only scare people if I come out and talk about what they're saying and what's going to impact on the markets and things like that. And it always seems to work out. You know, I remember back when in the 1970s, you know, they came out and they said, well, we're not going to have leaded gasoline anymore. It's all unleaded. And then there was a little bit of growing pain during that period of time. Then they eventually moved through that. But, you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting was this whole notion of, you know, I said, people talking about markets being overpriced and, that prices were high and we're getting ready for a downturn in the market or something like that. Well, there was an article in MarketWatch who was just the opposite, which gives you that notion that markets are very efficient. You know, anytime you have a buyer, you have a seller. Every time you have a seller, you have, yes, a buyer on the other side. And that's what market efficiency basically says. You know, when we look at trying to figure out where the market's going to go, you know, you may be bearish. In other words, you think that markets are going to go down. But there are other people that are bullish on the other side, just as many. And that is why stocks are selling for what they're selling for. You know, anytime you're going, hey, man, I think I'm going to sell. I'm going to get out. I'm scared. You know, I was talking to one of my friends, and he was talking about this lady he knew. She says she was just going to sell everything out of the stock market and stick it into an indexed annuity. And I said, I may want to have her check out some of my radio show segments lately in my newsletter, because I walked through some things in the past couple of weeks talking about that and going, yeah, may just want to think twice about that, because there's stuff that you just don't even realize what's going on underneath the surface in the insurance industry. And when you're selling out and going into that, you're basically buying fixed income investments. Well, when are you going to get back in the stock market? Well, when things look okay. Well, when do things look okay? After they go up. So you basically sell low or sell when you think it's low, whatever. And then you're not going to buy in until when? A big jump in the market. So you're going to be buying higher, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And, you know, this person, particular lady was talking about, she's only in her 50s. I mean, good grief, you could be going another, 40 years, 50 years even. And, that's something I talked about in my newsletter. Matter of fact, I'll probably talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, one of the things that I walk through is what a huge difference, absolutely mind-bogglingly huge difference based on some recent research. When you look at a 50-year period, I'll spend some time on that later. But back to this article, it was saying six reasons that this is a fresh multi-year bull market. So this person is saying just the absolute opposite of what some people are saying regarding markets. Now, I'm not going to endorse what this person is saying and saying, hey, they're right. I think that the markets are going to, shoot up like crazy over the next several years, because you don't know. But I just like to use stuff like this just to make the point that there are opinions on the other side always. You know, if you're really bullish, there's people out there that think markets are going to go down if you're really back and forth, right? So anyway, nothing like a little October turbulence, this writer says in MarketWatch, Michael Brush, to help the market's weak hands in a touch with their inner bears. Get in touch with their inner bears. So don't let their negativity rub off on you. So he's saying, now, with the markets up and down, and I call that noise. I mean, that's an academic, really, I steal that from academic world, that noise is just when you have market movements up and down, a couple points here, a couple percent here, it's just noise. It's just normal. I mean, you look at it and go, good grief, get these moves that'll be up 1% one day and down percent the next day, and it's back and forth. And what that is the market trying to figure out, what's the proper price of this stuff? What should I be paying for stocks right now? And it'll be moving all around. And it won't be until you get some really big news that big moves actually occur either up or down. Now, most of the time, it's up, right? So two-thirds, three-quarters of the time, markets go up. One-third, one-quarter of the time, it goes down. And it just depends how diversified you are. But don't let the negativity rub off on you, this writer says. We're still near the beginning of what will be a multi-year bull market. Now, remember I said that, you know, we've been talking about large U.S. stocks, and they've been going up year after year. And two-thirds of the time, you know, up, right? One and three-quarters of the time, you know, up. One-quarter of the time, one-third of the time, down. But here's the little secret about stock markets. They're properly priced. It's not a secret. You won the Nobel Prize. They're properly priced based on all knowable and predictable information. And, you know, I like what I think was Burton Malkiel said, Princeton professor, the market doesn't have a memory. And that is an incredibly important point to remember. You know, it doesn't go, hey, you know what, last 3 years we've been up. It's time to go down. You know, it doesn't do that. It basically will move based on new information. It's always forward-looking because anybody that's a buyer is or a seller is always looking out into the future. Now, the buyer is looking out in the future and saying, hey, are things likely to be, you know, good, or what do we expect them to be? And, you know, what price should I be paying based on what is expected in the future? And it doesn't have a memory. They're not looking back at the past. Hey, what did it do over the past 5 years, 6 years, 7 years? That's in the past. It doesn't matter at all. You know, you can have many, 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 many years in a row where it goes up, and then you can have several years in a row it goes down, or you have 1 year it goes down, then you can have in the middle of a year it goes down, and then comes back up before the end of the year. There's no memory, and that's really, really important to understand about stock markets. So, yeah, you're not going to be able to figure out where it's going to go because all the information that's knowable and predictable gets built into it. That's the idea. And this person is saying, hey, look, we're looking at a multi-year bull. But, you know, here are the reasons why this person is believing that markets are going to be going up further. And the first one was the sentiment hasn't gotten bearish enough. And he says he regularly tracks investor sentiment in his stock newsletter, and he makes contrarian calls on the market. And he says, well, while most of the money should be in long-term holdings, timing entries, which I always tell people don't try to time, but anyway, this is what this guy does. When most people are bearish, gives you an edge. You know, in other words, just be contrarian. If everybody's excited about something, go the other direction. If everybody's, you know, despondent and worried, you know, go the other direction. Buy. Sentiment is not extremely negative, he says, but it fell enough this week to trigger a buy signal in his system. Now, it's worth pointing out that the major media figures turned pretty negative this week. And, you know, people don't have a lot of patience. I mean, just in general, investors don't have a lot of patience. But you got to realize the media thrives on bad information. You know, so they will be more negative more quickly because it sells papers. It gets people looking at articles and reading articles because what do people want? I want you to tell me what's going to happen next. So if they get a little bit negative, you're more likely to look, and then you're more likely to go and look for some kind of an indicator as to what's going to happen next with their writings. I mean, let's face it. If you look at the big financial channels, when did they have off-the-charts viewership? Answer, 2008. They had, in early 2009, off-the-charts viewership. Better than ever. And I remember that it was pretty doggone good back in 2002 as well, which was the last, you know, big market downturn. Now, he says he won't name names regarding media figures. He says, but the fact that their negativity, that they're so negative, it's a bullish signal in this guy's book. Doesn't mean I think they're dense. I don't think they're stupid. It's just that high-profile media commentators are consensus sponges. It's an occupational hazard. And we can use that to our advantage as investors. Now, what's interesting about this, we also see that in the investment industry in general. And one of the things that I always talk about with clients is I'll say, hey, you know, we're not going to look like the rest of the market. We're not going to look like the rest of the investment firms out there. I promise you that. We're not going to look like Vanguard. We're not going to look like Fidelity. We're not going to look like American Funds. We're not going to look like any of the big investment firms, big brokerage firms. And the reason is I am ornery enough to think that I can educate you to not look like everybody else. Because nobody wants to go and look like a fool. And diversification will make you look like a fool always. Because there will always be something that you own that doesn't do as well as the top performing thing by definition, right? I mean, that's just by definition. So in the early 2000s, when you had large U.S. growth companies, well, let's go back to the late 90s. In the late 90s, when you had large U.S. growth companies rocking it and doing really, really well, and technology just taking off like crazy, a diversified investor looked like a fool. Now, of course, over the next 10 years, 12 years, you look like a genius. But, you know, the reality of it is that, you know, as long as you don't look different than everybody else, my zebra example over the past couple of weeks, you know, zebra, then can't tell them apart. When they're all together, that black and white is camouflage. You know, that is really good for an investment manager, not to look different than anybody else. You're less likely. Because why? Because they don't educate investors. You know, how many investors are really educated by the big investment firms? You know, where they really understand how to measure risk, where returns come from, the expected return of a portfolio, having an investment policy statement, any of those things. I mean, it's really, that's not something, you know, how do I measure diversification? I don't know how do you measure. Well, I know diversification is important. How do you measure it? I don't know. Well, how do you control something you can't measure? You can't. Answer. So, you know, sentiment hasn't gotten bearish enough, and that's number one reason this person says that he's bullish. Second one was seasonality is in his favor, and he was talking about October, you know, being one of the weaker months of the year historically. Whether it will be in the future, who on earth knows? If it's really going to be weak, everybody's going to sell in September, right? And then sit out October and then buy back in November. But, you know, who really knows, you know, if that's going to be something that continues? It used to be that you had the January effect. The January is always a rocking good month. And, you know, the reality of it was that people started buying in December, and then you start calling a Santa Claus rally because people started buying in December in anticipation that January would be good. I mean, see how futile this all is. But anyway, this person saying, yeah, you know what? October, typically a weaker month, and, you know, we're getting through that. You know, we're almost halfway through it now. And then the third one is COVID is rolling over. You know, I said basically no secret that case counts and hospitalizations are down sharply. And then, you know, people wanting to get out. And, you know, could we have the supply chain start to open back up if that happens? I mean, a lot of the things that are being held back right now could go away. And it says correction may have already happened. You know, there may have already been somewhat of a correction. Correction is a bad word. It means that stock prices were incorrect before, but that's his point. Fifth thing here. New strong household formation. Millennials finally giving up on the parents' basement. He said if there was any truth to that cliche. So, you know, maybe they're getting out there, and then, you know, as time goes on, they'll start getting out and getting their own homes, and it's good because you start building more homes, and more homes you build, the more stuff you need inside the homes. So that drives the economy. Might be really good there. Maybe getting into prime age for marriage and family. So that might be something that's a positive for the economy. Another one is that the consumer is scared, locked and loaded. And again, if they're a little bit nervous, you know, bottom line, if they're scared, they have a ton of buying power to tap when anxieties ease because they tend to hold a lot of money in cash. When they tend to hold a lot of money in cash, and then all of a sudden, whatever they're scared of goes away and starts to break loose, that cash gets invested and drives markets up. So, you know, I think the point here is this. There is always somebody on the other side of a trade, and, you know, there are always reasons that I just we'll just not try to figure out where markets are going to go next. It is a futile exercise because these kind of things, you know, you'll have both sides. And I think that is a key to keep in mind as an investor. The more you understand that you can't figure it out, the less likely you will be to try to figure out where markets are going. Stay really strongly diversified. Only change your investment mix based on time horizon changes. You know, if you have a difference in when you're going to get money out, or you know how much you're going to be pulling out, and it should be gradual changes typically in the investment mix. You know, I might change my mix back from stocks to bonds, maybe 1% a year or 2% a year, but no big changes between one versus the other as I get older. All right. Let's change gears now. Well, this is interesting. There was, according to MarketWatch, there was a phony psychic scheme. They used letters containing talismans, whatever that is. I guess I don't know much about the psychic world. Talismans? I don't know. And promise of riches to bilk elderly victims out of millions of dollars. You know, that... It is amazing what people will try to do. You know, it just no shame. The letters would arrive in the mail bearing magical talismans and promises of soon to be realized fortunes. I mean, just wonder how on earth, you know, when people will respond to these types of things and what's going on as far as, I don't know, personal situations. If the recipient acted quickly and they sent back a $50 fee. So basically they sent out all of these things and it was sent to post office boxes in Switzerland. No, I'm not making this up. But the windfalls never materialized. Imagine that. Federal prosecutors say it was all a scam. So basically they have all these people, as a French company out there doing this, sending out this mass mailing. And they get shut down. And it just reminds me of some of the other scams that I've talked about here on the show before. I remember one that was, they sent these stock selections. It was newsletter type of thing. And you get a lot of these newsletters. Good grief. I see, you know, I'll get emails from, Paul, what about this newsletter? What about this video? What about this thing out there? You know, what do you think about this? And I just shake my head and go, oh my goodness. You know, people want positive returns, no risk. They want the next big thing, and typically they get scammed because of that desire, whether it be greed or whatever. I don't know. I don't even want to speculate as to what that is. But there was this one where they would send out these stock selections, and they go, "Hey, you know what? We got this stock, and we think that this stock is going to go up." And then what they do, they send the same number of letters out, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, saying that same exact stock was going to go down. So they got a bunch of stock, you know, a bunch of letters going out, half saying that XYZ stock is going up, and then the other one, XYZ stock is going to be going up. And you know, and then what happens is if it goes up, the people that they sent the letter to saying it would go up, they go and, you know, they take all of those people and then they send them a new letter. And the new letter says that ABC stock is going to go up. And then half of those people, they send another letter saying that it's going to go down. So let's say you got 10,000 people in the first one. It gets down to 5,000 because half that got it, you know, whichever direction XYZ went, 5,000 people got the letter saying it was going to go up. So let's say that it was going to go up. So they got 5,000 people. It's going up. So they send a second letter, 2,500 to of these people that ABC is going up, 2,500, no, ABC is going down. And if ABC goes down, then they send a third letter to the people that got, you know, the one that said it was going down and say, hey, we've given you two stock picks and both of them been dead on right. You're going to have to pay for the third one. And that's when people pay up, and because they think that these people have the magic gift. Now, they may do it more than two times, but you know, I just want you to get the point that this is the kind of stuff that happens. And, you know, this one is, you know, another one, the psychic. And, you know, the thing that gets me about this one is I remember, I guess it was, 1998? You remember there was a psychic friends network, and they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. You think, well, wait a minute. Who would be better able to tell me which direction the stock market's going to go than the Psychic Friends Network? And, you know, they couldn't get it. But, you know, as his prosecutors said, the scheme involving blanketing the country with hundreds of thousands of letters from purported psychics promising impending wealth if the recipient quickly sent back a fee. And I guess keep in mind that the Psychic Friends Network couldn't even keep their own company out of bankruptcy. So I think anything from psychics you can pretty much dismiss. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. You want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.